If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
My friends, the great experiment.
Down on the Lord, thanks.
Hit it.
Trick.
Would you look at that?
The greatest trick.
You people, you're all astronauts. Some kind of star.
Trick.
The greatest trick.
Welcome to Greatest Trek. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison, coming to you live from a hotel in Brooklyn.
Yeah, that's right. You'll occasionally hear the sounds of a Brooklyn street.
Yeah, which is mostly sirens.
Sirens and the burbling brook of gutter water.
Mm. Fresh fish.
Mm-hmm.
Come through the window. Time to time.
The ice cream man.
Yeah.
If we're lucky.
Oh, that would be great.
Hot day in Brooklyn today. Unseasonably hot.
Is there anything that would stop us from running downstairs and getting a SpongeBob popsicle if we heard the ice cream man drive by?
Nothing besides our duty to record this episode. So rarely we get to record these on the road, but here we are.
Yeah.
This cramped Brooklyn hotel room.
Yeah. It's like they built this building from scratch. They knew it was going to be a hotel, and yet cramped.
Yeah, I know. That's how it is.
I don't know what's going on there. Like, all of these new Brooklyn hotels are like this. They're all, like, impossibly chic, but very, very cramped.
I have an edgelord hotel opinion, which is...
Oh, boy. Are you going to get canceled for your hotel opinion, Adam?
My opinion is, if your hotel has a shower curtain in the bathroom... It's a fine hotel. Like, it's all right.
It's not the finest hotel. It's a mid hotel.
It would be hard for me to call that hotel good, is what I'm saying. And I have a shower curtain in my shower.
There's something inherently unclean feeling about a shower curtain.
Even if it's my own shower curtain.
Yeah.
I don't love it.
No, it's bad.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm recording my audio from underneath a shower curtain to get the best possible audio for Friends of DeSoto today.
Yeah, we had to do a Zoom meeting right before this, and the person on the other end of the call pointed out that you have a pickle made out of, like, high pile carpet as wall art in this room.
Carpet pickle.
You have carpet pickle.
I do.
I envy your carpet pickle. I think that would look great in my recording studio, and it would be good sound treatment.
I've got golf on the brain, so I never really saw a pickle there. What I saw was like a topographic view of a golf course hole.
It does kind of have, like there's a water feature in there, a couple of sand traps.
Yeah. Gonna have to take a picture of this for the gram.
Yeah. I think it's pretty definitively wall pickle.
We're halfway through the tour at this point, Ben. How are you feeling about it?
Is this the halfway mark?
We used to do a segment. Remember the tour stories?
Yeah.
Segment? This is a tour story.
Tour story!
Of two podcasters.
Welcome to the greatest generation.
Who chose to leave their house, go on the road, and do their show in front of an audience. To find out what happens... when things stop being edited and start getting real. The tour world. We just had a great show in Brooklyn last night.
Super fun.
Went late at the after party. Stu hosted us at one of his many fine bars.
Yeah, we went to Minnie's Bar.
Yeah.
Enjoyed ourselves. I had some frozen painkillers there.
Good job by you. Nice. I tried to keep it clean. Just tequila sodas. And a weird mezcal drink with Aperol in it.
Oh, so you didn't keep it clean.
Yeah, I guess not.
I finally snuck one in where I actually ordered directly from the bartender because we've been doing shows in Brooklyn for years. Mm-hmm. Stu is always very nice to open his bars up to us and our pals mm-hmm. and sometimes a bunch of friends at DeSoto after these shows. Mm-hmm. And then like will not let us pay for drinks. So I snuck down the other end of the bar and ordered one directly from the bartender and left a nice fat tip.
Hell yeah.
For all of those nice years of taking good care of us. So
that's great.
That felt good.
I'm glad you did that, Ben, because I just left and I felt shitty about it.
Well, I felt shitty in the past. Like, yeah. You know, like the bartender still had to work and I don't like usually carry that much cash. So it's not.
Yeah.
It's not possible unless you get a transaction going.
Any word about if Stu's bartenders are going to unionize against against the FODs freeloading at our after parties?
I think that the freeloaders have been us the entire time. I think they're charging the FODs.
In your case, you're really taking advantage.
Yeah. Well, it's also funny because like it's a nice thing that occasionally will happen is somebody will say, hey, man, let me buy you a drink. I really enjoyed the show. And I'll say, like, I cannot allow you in good conscience to buy me a drink. Because I'm drinking for free tonight. Like all of my drinks are already paid for.
That's a good, I don't buy things off of my porch.
Yeah.
Type of moment for you.
Yeah. But it's hard to imagine being in a bar and having having it be hard for you to get money to them.
Man, we're really living the dream.
Yeah.
Like
this is living, man. This
after party at a great bar drinking for free.
Yeah. Food everywhere as though the party was catered.
Pretty nice.
Don't you wish R. Kelly hadn't written that song so we could still enjoy it?
Oh, you slapshotted that one right past my reference goalie. That one hit all net. I don't have R. Kelly lyrics on the brain like you.
You don't have Remix to Ignition just like living rent free?
I don't.
Man.
I don't understand that song's popularity.
Whoa.
It's fine.
I mean, it's not fine anymore, now that we know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fine to some people.
Yeah. Well, this has been a nice controversial marriage.
We'll edit all the controversy out.
Yeah.
As usual.
How about new?
Do you want to get into the 7th episode of Star Trek Lower Decks?
Controversial episode, perhaps.
Hmm.
Let's get into why that might be the case, Ben. It's Star Trek Lower Decks Season 4, Episode 7!
I hope we don't accidentally review Episode 8. If you like pina
coladas, a few badgies more.
Bring it on! You know the greatest danger facing us is an irrational fear of the unknown.
I really liked the way the title of this picks up where A Fistful of Data's left off, but it's also like on theme. It's like that was an episode where we got several versions of Data, and this is an episode where we get several versions of Badgy.
It's true. Yeah. None of the Badgies have mustaches, though.
No. And none of them are as adept with a shooting iron as they are with a woman's heart.
Computer, end program.
So we start in the Kala system, and we've actually seen this footage before. This is the Drukmani scavenger ship tractoring in Rutherford's old implant, which has been used to imprison Badgy.
This is a callback that spans seasons.
Yeah. I was wondering where we were getting, you know, whence Badgy? What happened?
Yeah.
We're finally catching up with Badgy. And we get to see some
whence Badgy? Now Spadgy is the answer.
Some Drukmani lower deckers hanging out, messing with what they're scavenging. And I was like, oh boy, here goes. These Drukmanis are about to catch it from that ship that's been taking everybody out. But no, when this episode seemed like it was about to zag, it zigged.
It zigged right into this Drukmani captain's face.
Yeah.
There's something so traumatic about face stuff in science fiction. You know, I think that's why the face hugger is such a unique science fiction horror thing.
Yeah, totally.
This Rutherford face appliance just sucks right into this captain's face.
Tickles, huh?
It's trying to salvage you!
The wires having, like, prehensile abilities all of a sudden is just very upsetting.
I mean, part of it is, like, the hug, right? No one wants to be hugged without consent. This guy's face gets hugged right on into this appliance.
Yeah. Like when we take pictures with friends of DeSoto in the meet and greets before shows, I used to like throw an arm over people's shoulders. And at some point, like I think before this tour, I was like, maybe I shouldn't do that.
Yeah, you got a Keanu Reeves that like, shit.
You got a hover hand.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been just not, but I think that some people sort of expect it. And I don't know where to go with that, you know?
You're the professional in the room.
I guess so. Yeah. Just err on the side of not touching people who haven't asked to be touched.
I think that's a good rule for almost any interaction. After the theme, we're aboard a Bynar ship.
You think that, like when Wendy flipped that audio back around... she'll be able to slow down what the Bynars are saying and we'll be able to hear them saying stuff.
The copy of my screener didn't have subtitles.
Yeah.
This is the lower decks, right?
I don't think they're subtitling these Bynars.
Are these lower decks Bynars, though?
Yeah, I think so, because then they get called up to the bridge, right?
Well, my question is, there are... only two decks on a Bynar ship, right? How confusing has that got to be for a visitor?
Yeah, yeah. They're all identical.
Like, if I checked into this hotel, it's 13 stories. But if every story were either one or zero, I'd never find my room.
Oh, man, yeah. Thank God the people that built this hotel thought ahead on that one.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, they get tilted by this ship and smash cut right to a field of debris where Badgie is now sort of in control of this Drukmani ship.
Wow, looks like someone killed some Bynars. I think we can use this, boys.
I think this detail is really important for what happens at the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that pieces remain of these ships.
Yeah.
In the aftermath, suggests a level of destruction that I think we've been fairly confident about the entire season.
I mean, but I have been wondering about it. I mean, I think we've both been kind of wondering aloud, like, are these ships actually being totally destroyed or are they just getting taken somewhere? And it just seems like that. Are they leaving scraps to, like, make it seem like they're being destroyed is a question in my mind now.
You're positing a kind of junk shot situation that a submarine would do?
Yeah, like loading the garbage into the torpedo tube.
I don't know. This was irritating, though, by the end of this episode. I'll tell you why then.
Yeah. It also seemed like the lesser Drukmanis, not the captain, had, like, glowy things stuck out of their necks, which made me think that there's some sort of collective... going on where Badgie is in control of them.
The Drukmani captain with Rutherford's face appliance is at this point, why don't you put Badgie in charge?
Fucking A.
You can count me out.
On the Cerritos, Rutherford are hanging out with Tendi and Mariner. Still no Teal'c in this episode. She's been missing for a little while.
Absent. Yeah.
Rutherford is testing a grappler device that he is trying to affix to their Sequoia shuttle. This accidentally turns out to be a great way to get Tendi out of her shirt. It's like, come on, Rutherford, you just got to ask her about that. Like, don't shoot a grappler at her.
It's a grappler. It has to be precise.
I kept on thinking of Grappler Zorn during the throwing around of the word grappler.
I couldn't not think about Grappler Zorn in this scene. I was shocked that no reference came up.
I know.
That's really more of our kind of joke than Lower Decks kind of joke. Like, hey, this sounds a little bit like that. Let's talk about it for a while.
God, when you put it that way, we really sound fucking stupid. There is a clothing error here at the end. when Tendi gets held fast against the wall.
Yeah.
And then slips out of it, leaving only her action tank top.
Yeah. I'm mad at Rutherford if this was all planned. That's not cool, Rutherford. Tendi wants to show you what's under that tank top.
Red Eye Rutherford would do that.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe there's a little red eye still left inside of him.
Tendi describes the scene in terms that we need to hear throughout the episode. Science is messy. It's full of experimentation. Sometimes it doesn't always go the way you expect.
Sometimes that shit is nasty.
But it's required.
Yeah. Gotta do it. So they get brought up to a briefing with Ransom and Captain Freeman. And this is kind of a rare McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
Where the Beta Shift are like there with the captain and the first officer. And they're getting told what their missions are going to be today's episode. And Tendi is being sent to Daystrom to sit in on Peanut Hamper's parole hearing.
I guess the system really works.
Boimler's in the middle of making fun of her for that when they tell him he is also going to be going to Daystrom to get some testimony from Agamus about information Agamus has on this Binar ship that has been destroyed.
Do you think, like, as our culture experiments with artificial intelligence, we've already created the penitentiary necessary for the bad ones? Because when we cut over to the Daystrom Institute AI megalomaniacal penitentiary, yeah, like, it sure does seem necessary.
It does.
We should get on that right now, I think.
I like that Lord Tyrannicilicus is making progress in group therapy.
I have conquered self-doubt and seized personal growth!
That's always good to see.
Yeah.
You know, coming to circle isn't always easy.
This place has everything.
Yeah.
It's got the groups, it's got the gym, it's got the indoor garden.
Yeah. Do you think a lot of AIs get paroled from Daystrom with, like, real, like, jail bodies? Like, they've really done a lot of work on themselves in the yard.
I'm trying to imagine what a jail body would be. Like, is a jail body computer just a real fancy water-cooled case?
I do feel like a lot of these megalomaniacal AIs do look like gaming PCs.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So yeah, probably just, yeah, some kind of fluid cooling system, more
but that's,
glowy lights that do things in sequence.
The fluid cooling system's definitely on the outside. Like, evoking the idea of, like, vascular, muscular definition, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Would you look at that?
Agamus and Peanut Hamper are having a great time. They're sort of doing some gardening. Peanut Hamper has taken up tomato gardening, which I really enjoyed seeing because I enjoy growing tomatoes every summer.
I think you had it right. I think they were called Peanut Hammer when Peanut Hammer was fucking that Birdman. In the best episode of Lower Decks ever conceived.
They really get along great doing some evil plotting. And it's like, there's no subterfuge in this episode. We know from the second we see Peanut Hamper and Agamus that all of this is a ruse that they're pulling on the Starfleets to get Peanut Hamper on the outside and get Agamus on the outside so that they can get back to scheming and subjugating.
Colors have meanings in this context, Ben.
Yeah.
And when Agamus goes from red to blue, really seems like it's going to be convincing for most folks.
I thought having a blue light was only for good robots.
Not anymore.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there are some very uncool people in the Federation that want the robots to use the robot waste extraction facilities that they were assigned at manufacturing.
Right.
And they're passing all this fucked up legislation about it.
I just want to say how great Jeffrey Combs sounds in this episode.
He does.
Starting here, like, he's so expressive. There's such a roundness to the quality of his voice when Agamus, the character, is describing his evil plans. The disconnect is like he has a wholesome enthusiasm for the evil that he's planning to do.
Yeah.
And it's such a fun trick to do with dialogue.
How could you be mad at somebody who enjoys their work this much?
Yeah, it really makes a difference.
I also noticed that Jack McBrayer is doing something pretty similar with Badgie, just because of the like proximity of the comparison in this episode.
Yeah.
A lot of heavy hitters in this one.
Yeah.
In the voice acting department.
They're scanning the binar parts on the Cerritos, and they've arrived at this nebula, but they don't get very far in this task before they find the Drukmani ship.
Yeah.
And the captain's down already. Like, this is a very speedy FaceTime.
Yeah. Badgie is on camera, and Rutherford happens to be on the bridge for this, so Badgie identifies his father, who murdered him, and is very, very angry at Rutherford. And Rutherford really pulls a, like, Spock going to the warp core maneuver here. He, like, leaves the bridge before anybody notices, and he gets in his spacesuit and is, like, in space while the captain is, like, desperately ordering him to come back to his station.
It doesn't seem like it should be this easy for anyone to put on a spacesuit and leave the ship.
But it is.
Yeah.
Mariner is right behind Rutherford. She also wants to go over there with him and help him deal with this problem. The Cerritos is taking heavy fire, and Mariner feels like Rutherford has the plan to fix it and is like totally pissed off when they get beamed over to the Drukmani ship to find out that Rutherford was just going over there to like sacrifice himself. Like, take me, I'm the one you want. You don't have to boop the Cerritos to death.
Rutherford's instinct is to do this a lot over the course of his career. I feel like we've watched this kind of move happen before.
Rutherford really plays from the Spock playbook, I think.
Yeah.
Despite being like a really enthusiastic, silly guy, I feel like he really sweats like the choices that Spock made professionally.
Aw, I see you've sacrificed yourself for your crew, Father. So noble.
What did you make of the Badgie playbook where, like, on all of those push zooms into his face, he kind of, like, I know these things have a name. Like, what's the sort of smiley emoji that, like, looks creepy and terrifying with those weird eyes? Like, you'll see them printed and posted outside of, like, a bodega or something with, like, that say, like, no bathroom or whatever. You know what I'm talking about? Like, there's the yellow smiley with creepy eyes. This is what Badgie's doing a bunch this episode.
Yeah, he gets, like, much more, like, detailed shading and eye veins.
And bloodshot eyes.
Yeah, when we go close in on him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what that's called. Definitely feels like a kind of internet comic reference.
Ugh. I hate these phases.
Yeah, they're really scary. Back on Earth at the Daystrom Institute, Boimler goes in to interview Agamus, who is a little bit surprised, I guess, to be getting interviewed by Boimler this quickly. Agamus is like a bad actor. Like, he changes his lighting to blue, but then is still like using kind of grandiose, megalomaniacal language when he talks to Boimler.
Did you ever watch Mindhunter, the show?
I did watch Mindhunter. I liked that show.
There's something about this scene that evoked that, you know?
Yeah.
Like Boimler never seems out of control in this scene, even though it's fucking Boimler. Like, I kept on, like, the tension in this scene and in every scene involving Boimler and Agamus is like, when is he going to fuck this up?
Yeah.
But he always has control.
The thing that always distracted me about Mindhunter was that the actor that played the main character also played the king in Hamilton when I saw it on Broadway.
Wow.
And so I kept just thinking about him as the king in Hamilton.
Yeah.
I couldn't get that tone out of my head.
That guy's great.
Yeah, he really is.
Boimler believes him because he's blue. I think that's a crucial aspect to this scene.
The light is reassuring.
Or does he, like, let Agamus believe that he believes him?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Either could be true.
Yeah. So anyways, on the Drukmani ship, Rutherford just wants to give Badgie a hug. Like, this is the thing that he should have done all those years ago.
Isn't that the point of all this?
It's clear that at least part of Badgie responds to this. And it really works.
Yeah, and a specific part. The good part.
Right, and That's because badgie contains multitudes.
All badgies contain three badgies.
Right. Inside every badgie is three badgies. And one of them splits off here.
I'm Goodgy.
Goodgy is silver, and Goodgy is all of the parts of badgie that are good. And this gambit of Rutherford's, which maybe it's cynical to call it a gambit, but Rutherford is realizing that what motivates Badgie to be so evil is the fact that Rutherford treated Badgie like an interesting science experiment and not like a sentient creation and therefore like a son.
Mm.
So Rutherford's trying to make up for lost time, trying to do a thing I think a lot of like dads realize they probably should have done earlier, you know?
Do they?
I mean, I'm certainly realizing I probably should be nurturing and caring of my son, and I probably should have started that earlier on.
Yeah. I think I'm still waiting for that. Gonna keep waiting.
Hey, not all dads get to these things at the same time, Adam.
I know.
For some of them, it takes more than their entire life.
We need to score a lot of laps fast.
Licensed businessman.
This is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Well, there's a new ship. She's got the right name. She's got the right name. Now you remember that, you hear?
We've got two badges now, and Goodgy knows that Badgie is bad before Rutherford and Tendy do, and so encourages them to run the fuck away.
Yeah, that's his only plan.
Meanwhile, Boimler and Tendy have taken their shuttle and put Agamus on the shuttle and flown away from the Daystrom Institute, like strapped down, though, and Agamus now has these drones that it was using to water plants while it was hanging out with Peanut Hamper, but is now using them to like fuck up the guidance system on the ship or something.
These things really look like little mini Echo Papa 607s.
Yeah, but like eviler, because they're black and they have little devil horns.
It made me think about how much more terrifying the Echo Papa 607 episode would have been if they were just black with red lights on the front.
Yeah.
I wonder if there was a problem at the time with them not reading on film, because you remember like so much of that episode was psych with like that blue sky background. And if those devices are black, I don't think you read their contours in the way that they're shot. Maybe that's as simple as the reason was that they were sort of brassy looking.
I know that a lot of the time with those model shots, you use black as the background to create like mattes. So I wonder if they'd made it black, it like wouldn't have read properly on camera or something.
I don't know. But this scene really did make me think about like, God, with just a color change.
Yeah. Yeah. When they went to HD, they should have eviled up the Echo Papa 607.
Yeah. Does it seem like Agamas could make a limitless amount of these, because once we were on the planet later, would seem as though that's the case.
Yeah.
Right?
I can rearrange air molecules into whatever you want.
Even one of those fancy new tricorders with the purple stripe.
Ooh, those are nice.
Oh.
Hey, are these Agamas's kids?
Oh, wow.
Hey, guess who's also not getting hugs?
The Echo Papa 6.07s?
Yeah.
Because they're little.
Sad.
Yeah, so I guess they like crash land the shuttle and they're on a beach in Ecuador with Agamas. And Tendley and Boimler have had like bindings put around their hands.
Mm-hmm.
But they're chilling. Like they're not stressed. Like Agamas is way more stressed than they are, because Agamas was expecting to find Peanut Hamper here and like go off and do more evil shit together.
It's strange when a megalomaniac... We're going to keep missing that word, huh? It's strange for the megalomaniacal artificial intelligence supercomputer can only think about one thing, and that is the absence of a person that they love.
Yeah. I was watching a British guy on TikTok talk about dinosaurs, and he pronounced it ankylosaur.
Mm.
Ankylosaur.
And I was like, whoa.
That's a chaotic choice that I fully support.
So he's starting to worry that Peanut Hamper went on ahead, like is doing the next step in their evil plan without him.
Yeah.
She went to Plymeria.
Yeah. Maybe she's doing some of the chores now instead of just him all the time.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
What? That doesn't sound like her.
I wonder if they have nice sandy beaches on Plymeria. They don't have them on Orion.
The tone remains consistent throughout these scenes. Like, Boimler and Tendi are fine. They're fine because they're waiting for this intelligence dump that Agamas has promised.
Yeah, it's all a ruse to just lull Agamas into a false sense of thinking he has thoroughly enough subjugated them.
But this leash is so long on Agamas that it permits Agamas to subjugate an entire planet in order to eventually get this intelligence.
I was wondering about that, because like conquering a planet can't be a bloodless enterprise.
Yeah. These people are enslaved.
Yeah.
Yep, Starfleet definitely wouldn't be able to reverse this in an hour.
You know, this is another really hot topic, Ben. A third rail, if you will, that I might not even want to touch.
Oh, boy. Hey, but, maybe you should put this up on X instead of our show.
Do you think Boimler and Tendi are okay with just a little bit of slavery? Like a day of it?
But like, for how many people? Like, how many man hours of slavery are we talking about?
They're doing that kind of equation in their minds because they're like, yeah, the Federation can come in and undo this. But Ben, I don't think you really undo the consequences of slavery.
So that's your spicy take?
Well,
you can't undo the consequences of slavery?
My consequences...
I agree.
My spicy take is, why did Tendi and Boimler allow this to happen for any length of time?
Yeah. Is there, like, plausible deniability in, what? We were tied up. We couldn't do anything. No good?
Kind of amazing. Maybe they hate these people.
Yeah.
And they got what they deserved.
Yeah, maybe the Plymerians are assholes that deserve everything they got. Meanwhile, Badgie is neurozening everybody on the Cerritos because Badgie was given access to all of the Federation's databases, so it knows how to, you know, shoot through shields.
Exact same type of question, Ben. Is just a little bit of neurozine okay?
Mm-hmm.
Like, no permanent effects?
I really wanted somebody to say, turn off that neurozine and, like, smash over to Judson Scott having a little cameo in the role.
Right.
I can't!
Right.
Would have been nice.
If you get neurozined and you're not expecting it, that could be bad.
Yeah.
It's a long way to the bottom of the warp core, Ben.
That's what happened to Houdini, you know?
Yeah.
Like, Houdini could take some neurozine, but that guy just came up and sucker neurozined him.
Yeah. That's the prestige.
So Rutherford is like, no, we have to stop this. And they run up to the bridge of the Drukmani ship to confront Badgie again. And this time, Rutherford tries logic on Badgie, and this is, you know, him trying to speak persuasively about how there's no ultimate upside to Rwenge.
What does it mean?
It means omerta. It means Rwenge.
Did you find this persuasive, Adam? You're a noted revenge enthusiast.
I am, yeah. I think this held together.
Okay. Well, it doesn't hold together for Badgie, who splits apart again. And this time, Logicky is born. And Logicky is kind of a brass badge. And now Badgie has like glowing eyes. Like it's like Badgie is heading in the direction of being Armus at this point, right? Like
it's true.
All dank and vile, no redeeming qualities, not even logic.
I really like all the straight lines on Logicky, like straight line eyebrows, straight line mouth, mm-hmm. straight line eyelids.
Yeah, talks a little Vulcan-y.
He's great.
Yeah, so like the Neurosian has gotten turned off, but...
But like it's interesting what's happening to Badgie physically, right? Because as he's splitting, you're taking away those aspects that could serve as guardrails to his bad intentions or his bad plans, right? So like by taking Guji out, there is no good in him. By taking Logicky out, there's no logic in him. So he becomes even more insane.
Talk about your all-time megalomaniacal artificial intelligences. This is bad news bears.
It's fun to do bad things.
Logicky finds it would be most logical to get up in him.
Yeah, Logicky tries to go back.
Yeah.
And gets snapped over Badgie's knee for his trouble. It's bad, man. Like, Badgie starts talking about uploading himself into all of the computers in the entire quadrant by, like, becoming a part of subspace. And Rutherford in this scene is very much like me, just, like, letting his paralyzing guilt get in the way of doing anything about it.
Yeah.
And Mariner...
frustrating for everyone around him.
A Mariner has to kind of like slap him and go like, hey, what would Tendi want you to do? She'd want you to stick with it. And he's like, yeah, Tendi is super hot and awesome. I will do it. Thanks, Tendi.
Well, I mean, Mariner's right because I brought it up, but no big deal.
The greatest trick is yet to come.
This awful plan seems so easy for Badgie to go through with.
Yeah. Kind of terrifying. Like, how close was like Moriarty from figuring this out? Or
it's the downside of a bunch of networked systems, right?
Yeah.
But I will not allow a networked computerized system to be placed on this ship while I'm in command.
We should dismantle the internet, come to think of it.
Hey, I think Starfleet should air gap more shit. Right?
Yeah. On Plymeria, we find out that Peanut Hamper has gone home to the Tyrus 7A research station, which is the research station that they went to in the ExoComps episode.
That's the one.
Yeah. Good callback.
A lot of glass that needs cleaned.
Yeah. Indeed. Meanwhile, like, you know, the Drukmani ship is going to warp 9.9, which seems like awfully fast for this piece of shit salvage barge.
Wouldn't you want to be very careful not to get as close as possible to turning yourself into a little lizard?
Yeah.
Little lizard person.
Could Badgie turn into that?
Yes.
It's like accelerating evolution, right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't make any sense because evolution is a conversation between biology and the environment. So it's like, how could just going really fast accelerate it?
Evolution is a spectrum, man.
so that's going really bad. Boimes and Tendi arrive at this space station, and they see a bunch of exocomps cleaning the glass, and Agamus can't believe what he's seeing. Like, he just cannot imagine a synthetic not being a megalomaniacal AI.
Peanut Hamper really has that vibe of like out of prison, on parole, really trying to make it work.
Trying to like, be on the straight and narrow.
Like working a diner for an asshole. She's got to kick all of her tips back to him.
Right. And if she has any complaints, he'll report her right to the parole board.
Yeah.
Well, what are you waiting for?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, they start having this conversation about how they were sort of talking each other into their schemes and plots. Like, subjugating isn't something that Agamas actually wants to do, because that's an experience Agamas has already had. Agamas just wants to be friends with Peanut Hamper.
They just zhuzhed each other up, didn't they?
Yeah. And it was like their fear that really caused them not to talk about, like, actual positive things they could do when they get out of jail.
Yeah.
Peanut Hamper was writing her parole speech, and it sort of became true in the writing down of it.
Did this scene confuse you? Because were you, like me, thinking that Agamas was in love with Peanut Hamper?
I did sort of think that Agamas was in love with Peanut Hamper, but they go to great lengths to stress that they were just in like with each other.
I kept on expecting for that other megalomaniacal shoe to fall, which was like for Agamas to take great umbrage with the idea that he would be scorned by her.
Right. Or it to turn into a, like, Peanut Hamper's dad telling Agamas he can stay here, but just not touch his daughter.
Well, I mean, that was another aspect to the whole thing. That interaction between Agamas and Peanut Hamper's father seemed very much like a boy getting brought home to meet girl's dad.
Right.
And how cliche that is.
Dad, come on!
No, sir. Just friends.
You know what it is? I think Peanut Hamper has a type, and it's bird person.
Yeah. Peanut Hamper has a type, and it's cloaca.
You're just gonna have to wing it.
Agamas doesn't have one of those, does he?
Maybe he could replicate
one. No, you know what? That's where the drones flew out.
Yeah, that's a cloaca.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Peanut Hamper puts one of those, like, cool $30 Japanese gardening tools into her beak. Goes up into the back of Agamas's drone hole.
Who knew maintenance could be so zen?
Yeah, and then they have to start, like, tiling things out and panning the camera away because that's a little too hot for Paramount Plus.
The Agamas cloaca produces both waste and drones.
Badgie has transferred himself into subspace and is shown being uploaded into all types of ships, like the ship that Teal'c came from, Deep Space Nine, Space Dock, like everything.
Music does a lot of the work here, right? The music gets bigger and bigger and bigger as the locations get bigger and more important.
I love the Badgie looking like a shark fin rising up out of the disk of the Milky Way galaxy.
Yeah.
And then
great shot.
The Badgie representation that is being holo projected on the Drukmani ship turns kind of light blue, sort of a koala color, I would say.
Yeah.
And starts talking about how omnipotence and omnipresence and all knowledge everywhere sort of destroyed the idea of revenge for him. Like, what's the point of that? That's such a petty, small thing when you know all things and are in every place all at once.
Badgie is small in every composition until this moment when he fills the frame with this knowledge.
This is like one of the few examples of absolute power corrupting Zero, having the reverse effect of corrupting its wielder.
Are you saying you don't want to genocide at all? Not even a little bit?
What about Rutherford? What about all Rutherfords everywhere? Maybe just start with that and see how it feels.
Have you ever considered a one-person genocide?
I'm feeling as guilty as Rutherford does in a lot of ways. And you might be the only person that could pass a law to fit my crime. Give it some consideration.
When you talk to that koala, put in a good word for me, Kevin Uxbridge.
The koala has been remarkably effective at keeping Dowd out of its hole.
Do koalas have cloacas?
That's like the title of a children's book. A children's book about genitalia.
We have got to write this.
No one gets to steal that idea.
Yeah, yeah. TM, TM, TM.
I'm mailing this podcast to us.
Okay, good, good.
In an unopened envelope.
So, yeah, Badgie goes through the wormhole to the koala, and I guess is no more, but Gudgie's still there.
Yeah, yeah.
But Logicky is dead, so Gudgie is without logic.
Yeah.
So what is Gudgie?
Gudgie's good!
Gudgie is goodness without any constraints.
Yeah.
Which sounds really annoying.
Sounds like it could backfire.
Yeah. Gudgie's got that puppy energy.
Yeah. We do get some information out of Agamis at the end of this about the Bynar ship and just the tilt ship capers in general. And they do talk about how these ships are being stolen. Like the people, I guess, is it the ships that are being stolen or the people being stolen off of the ships?
FODs at home are watching me shrug my shoulders. Unclear.
FODs looking at us through telescopes in this hotel room.
Yeah.
I'm still a little unclear, I have to say. But I'm glad that this possibility has been tossed out on our show.
Yeah, I mean, we had questions about it throughout. It's just whether or not we're satisfied with this beginning of an answer.
Yeah, yeah.
They aren't being destroyed. They're being stolen.
It's all fake?
The button on the end of this episode is another test of the shuttle grappler. It seems like this time, maybe Rutherford's trying to get Boehm's out of his pants.
Mm-hmm. Did you see that video of that carnival ride that was stuck upside down for just hours and hours?
No. Is this
upside
recent?
Upside down, yeah.
Oof.
I don't ride carnival rides for that reason. They just look too floppy and dangerous.
Yeah, anything that like folds up and fits on the back of a semi-truck, I don't really trust.
Yeah. Boimler's just left there.
Yeah.
For hours.
Blood flowing to his head.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the tone that we leave this episode with, Ben. What's the tone of your feelings about it? Did you like this episode?
She'll always bring it home.
I did like this episode. I thought this one was really hitting in the jokes department all the way through. I feel like they've got a plan with this tilty ship that's stealing ships. And the debris field from the Bynar ship definitely has me scratching my head, but it seems like they must have thought of something for that.
Yeah.
So plot-wise, I guess I enjoyed it. I'm a little sad that Badgie is gone. Maybe we'll see Badgie again now that Badgie is a being of pure energy.
I mean, I guess we're going to see Gudgie a whole bunch now.
Or Gudgie could just be part of the ship, but also, like T-Lin, just like disappear from time to time.
Isn't it strange how the depiction of good is also related to like being simple? Like, this is simple Gudgie.
I'm Gudgie.
I wanted T-Lin to meet Logicky.
Yeah.
You know, like I feel like a Vulcan would really like to meet Logicky.
Yeah. I mean, maybe.
Or they would find it acceptable or whatever.
Maybe if Logicky's body is shot into a Genesis planet,
mm-hmm.
He can live again.
There you go. That would be really great. Yeah, I really enjoyed this episode, and it has been really nice to have little episodes of Lower Decks to watch while we're in transit on tour. Like,
yeah,
nice short bite size. I got half an hour. I could watch an episode of Lower Decks. This is great.
Sure.
I'm
sure.
So glad that we have Star Trek like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about you?
Lower Decks is the tiny pack of Cheez-It that you get out of the basket on an airline.
Yeah.
I like the episode fine, but I take great umbrage with being lied to about what's going on with this tilt ship.
Mm.
I don't like being deceived by being shown a bunch of space parts in the aftermath of these attacks. And what's clearly a manipulation, like you're seeing these voices scream out in pain or terror. You're seeing parts in a starfield. The suggestion is destruction and death. A scene we've seen repeated six times so far. Now all of a sudden we're being told that that they're being stolen. I don't like that. I don't like being misled that way. I don't think it's I don't think it's fair.
Wow. Well,
Hopefully they're not getting like schismed or something. That would be really unfair.
Who is the only faction in the Star Trek universe that seeks to consume technologies of different species?
You're thinking this is a Borg situation.
Kind of am.
That would be extremely on brand for New Trek.
Wouldn't it? But I would really appreciate Lower Dex's spin on that.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you? Because I feel like they would have something very self-aware to say about it.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if I can go there with you on the Borg theory. I think that ship just looks different enough and isn't green enough that I don't buy it.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
All right.
We shall see. Really enjoyed this episode. Do you want to see if we have anything in the Priority One inbox?
Oh, yeah. I will tilt myself over and just consume them and not destroy them, Ben.
Cool.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Ben, we got a couple of Priority One messages here. And the first one's promotional.
Whoa.
Is your company hiring for a data analyst or similar role? Check out my website at databobby.com. where you'll find my portfolio of analytics projects covering topics like video game sales, global earthquake history, animal shelter data, and more to come. With a skill set of SQL, Python, Excel, R, Tableau, and years of work in hypergrowth startups, I'm excited to find that next opportunity. And if I can work with and maybe help another FOD get a referral bonus, then great. Visit my website, databobby.com. That's databobby.com, for my resume, analytics portfolio, and more.
Wow.
Oh, I said SQL, and it's pronounced SQL. I should have known better.
Yeah.
SQL is one of the areas of expertise here.
I found that out years too late as well.
Yeah.
Man, data analytics. That's something I don't know nothing about, so I don't even have like a rift to give Data Bobby.
Data Bobby is where you find out more, is where you get someone with some expertise in the area.
I need some expertise for sure. Well, Adam, our next Priority One message here is from Lick, that sends an annual anniversary message, and it's to Nibble, that gets an annual anniversary message, and it goes like this. This last year has been the hardest of our relationship, but we made it. And I believe we are now stronger than ever. And even though you break Adam and Ben's cardinal rule by horribly and knowingly reclining your seat during takeoff.
Oh, no.
I love you with all my heart. Boy, if you could find somebody that loves you in spite of reclining your seat ever, much less during takeoff, grab onto that person and hold on with all your might.
I'm going to thank Wendy for editing out my tirade there in order to keep the peace between me and Nibble.
Yeah, that was intense, man. Finding out about what Nibble is up to.
Yeah. Look, all relationships have hard times. I found that a Priority One message more than once a year, I think, can spice things up. If you'd like to write a Priority One message for us to read, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where what you write will come flying out of our mouths, and they will support the ongoing production of our shows at Uxbridge Shimoda.
Yeah, do that. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you discover yourself in Edward Larkin?
I mean, I think it's Rutherford, right? Rutherford is disobeying Freeman orders. Rutherford yep. is the creator of Badgie, a monstrosity that will not be controlled.
Does seem like he should be in a lot more trouble just like overall in his career than he is.
The similarities to Edward Larkin are all around us. Yeah, make mine Rutherford. What about you?
Boy, that's pretty persuasive. I was going to give it to Gudgie just for being like a pun that was right there in front of us the whole time and I hadn't seen it.
Yeah.
But I think I'm going to join you on the Rutherford square. I think Rutherford is the Edward Larkin of this episode. He's on the model of Edward Larkin in this episode.
Gucci seems like the name of a dating application to find good guys, you know, but the only vowel they took out was the U between right. the G and the Y.
Right. Turn a guy you meet on Gucci from a good guy to a wife guy.
That's it.
Yeah. that was a lot of fun. This episode was a whole lot of fun, Adam. Do you want to go into our company Slack and read out a warning bois?
Hell yeah. I'm going to find something good.
Prepare a buoy and launch it when ready.
Warning buoys.
An emergency buoy. A warning buoy.
So this is a segment where we read something that somebody said nice about our show on social media or in the podcast reviews that would encourage somebody to give the show a try. We really appreciate it when people go out into the world and talk about what we're doing because it helps us grow awareness of our show. And that helps the bottom line. Let me tell you what.
Ben, you're really going to like this one. This comes out of Facebook.
Okay.
There are Miriam Facebook groups dedicated to our show. And they've got their own areas of interest, like Exo Cooks, for example.
Right.
Friends of DeSoto with pets, pet lovers, etc. Like those are just two examples.
Sure.
Friends of DeSoto looking for Lerv.
Mm-hmm.
Friends of DeSoto of Gucci. Probably an area there. Here's a new one for you, Ben. Greatest Trek Twaining.
Oh, Jesus.
Is a new public group on Facebook with an enthusiasm for Twaining.
God.
And even though neither of us have Facebook accounts, we've been referred to kind of a lot over there.
Uh-huh.
And
this is like maybe the most compelling reason yet I've seen not to be on Facebook.
This is a delight. Everything is written like phonetically like Twain.
Well, that's kind of how Mark Twain wrote. So yeah. that stands to reason.
It's really big fun. So look for it on Facebook. That is the public group Greatest Trek Twaining for more. But
or don't look for that. Don't join it.
But many, many groups and their splinter groups on Facebook. A lot of really fun walled gardens over there
the
for FODs of all interests.
Splinter cell that I hope the NSA is looking into, honestly. Yeah.
That's big fun. Just wanted to shout them out.
God.
Hey, I want to shout out Wendy for making this sound like such a realistic studio location set in Brooklyn. Like all of the traffic sound, all of the sirens, the dog barking, everything you've heard throughout.
Yeah.
Digital effects that she's added in.
Yeah, she's got AI models of our voices and just kind of made this episode up out of whole cloth, I'm sure.
Amazing.
We left and got SpongeBob ice creams.
The housekeeping person that knocked and tried to enter during, like all of that was made by her. She's an incredible talent and we're lucky to have her. And here she is telling you what the next episode of Lower Decks is going to be about.
Take it away, Wendy.
Greatest Trek is an Uxbridge Shimoda podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. It's hosted by Ben Harrison and Adam Pranica, and it's produced and edited by Wendy Pretty. Next Friday, Ben and Adam will be back to talk about Lower Decks Season 4, Episode 8, which is titled Caves. And at the end of every episode of the show, we want to thank all the folks who make it possible. First and foremost, the MaxFun members who support on a monthly basis. Those folks get access to the entire catalog of bonus content, plus new bonus episodes coming out each month. It's easy to set up a membership at MaximumFun.org/join, and we really appreciate it. We also want to thank Adam Ragusea, who composed all of the original music for this show. Check out his YouTube cooking channel and podcast by searching for Adam Ragusea. Thanks to Nick Ditmore for creating the show art, and thanks to Bill Tilley for managing the @GreatestTrek social media pages, which you can find and follow all over the internet. In addition to those Facebook groups Adam mentioned, you can join FOD-run communities on Reddit @r/GreatestGen and on Discord @DrunkShimoda.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on Greatest Trek.
Should we pause for just room tone for a sec?
Yeah. Really hope that helps, Wendy.
Maximum Fun, a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows.
Supported
directly
by you.